Hello, one and all, this is Peter Higgins again. Conkers 3, we're now starting part 2 of this podcast of Twin Peaks on the 25th of October. I just want to give you all a bit of a heads up on what's been happening on the markets, really. And the markets have performed quite strongly this week because of some of the positive tones that were coming out at the start of the week regarding a Brexit deal potentially happening. And the markets, the FTSE finished today at 7,324, and that's actually up 2.3% on the week. The AIM share,
that's a good week for it, isn't it?
Very good week, and even the AIM All share performed and was up 0.8%. And the ones that were carrying that particular FTSE 100 performance were Fresnillo, which is a stock I've never really looked at. It's a mining company.
Yeah, they do like silver or something, don't they? In Chile, I think.
I don't know, Pete. I've never really looked at one of the miners that I stay away from.
Yeah.
AstraZeneca,
we know that one.
Which we know about. And Burberry, that was up 7.8%.
Wow.
I'm sure you've mentioned that before, Pete. And WPP, that came up with some good news this week that they're almost looking like they're turning the corner. So you've got,
you know, that is a funny one though, isn't it? Because the news came out today, didn't it, on WPP?
Yes.
And it was like yeah, we're doing sort of better than we thought we were, but it was like they were expecting like a -1% drop and they got a +1% rise. I mean, it's pretty pathetic, really, isn't it? Let's be honest.
It is, but what don't realise, those that are buying it today don't realise, is that quite a lot of the times, I'm not checked with WPP, so I can't be certain on this count, is a lot of the times the brokers have been downgrading and lowering their estimates anyway. So I'm not sure if that's happened with WPP, but they didn't beat by much, but the shares have popped up 6% this week. So I think people are expecting the worst, Pete. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. And I think, of course, the other thing is you get a lot of short activity on shares like that have been under pressure. Yes. So if they suddenly are doing better than the shorters think, the shorters want to get out flipping quick because they don't want to be caught out on it. But I think you need to be really cautious on WPP. I mean, if there's a general economic sort of weakness, companies like WPP are not going to find it easy.
Yeah, and this is the thing, you know, they've not been the same since Sorrell left, and I'm sure they don't want to admit that, but they've really, really struggled, and it's not a case of he's gone out there and started eating their lunch that severely.
Yeah.
They should have been able to do business and grow regardless of who the CEO is or was, and they haven't seemed to have done that since he's left.
No, exactly.
It's very frustrating for shareholders to see the share price is essentially at half of what it was, you know, less than what, 2 years ago.
Oh yeah, they've been battered. I mean, while we're on that subject of WPP, the obvious one, it's a bit speculative and people need to be careful, is that S4 Capital, S-F-O-R, which is the vehicle that Sir Martin Sorrell moved into. And that's just focused on digital marketing. And that's, you know, probably worth a look. I don't hold it or anything, but it's probably worth a look.
Yeah, that's a good call, Pete. That's where he's at. It's done quite well. It's started the year nearer to £1, currently sitting at 163. So he's growing the vehicle. But, you know, me putting a bias slant on it, there's only one digital media stock that I'm going to be, you know, shouting from the rooftops for, and that's Future, you know, Future PLC.
Oh yeah, FUTR,
which is up nearly 12-fold, 13-fold for me since
it's been incredible, hasn't it?
I've held that, so you know, and I'm hoping my secondary sort of play on that sort of digital sort of move, which is Reach PLC, will perform likewise over the next 3 or 4 years, because they're one of the largest paper companies in the UK, and they're looking to transition themselves, not necessarily away totally from print, but you know, go more so digital. So if they can do what Future have done over the last 5 years, then I suspect that they'll be able to grow. So, they're
Reach
large.
is the former Daily Mail, isn't it? Daily Mail and General Trust, is that right? Is that what it was called, or DMGT?
I'm not sure it was Pete. It,
Wasn't
because,
it?
yeah, because the
RCH, isn't it?
yeah, the, so their so their brands,
Yeah.
they cover Daily Mirror, yeah, The Echo, the OK Magazine, Manchester Evening News, all the regional sort of papers like that.
Yeah. What
So,
were they before then, if they weren't Daily Mail, DMGT? What were they before?
what they were
I'm
called before.
sure RCH was something before, and it evolved in. Was it called Mirror Group News? I don't know what it was, but
Trinity, Pete. You're thinking of Trinity, I think, mate.
Trinity. Yeah, you're right, mate. You got it. Yeah.
Yeah,
Sorry.
yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Okay, that could be one that we'll look at then. As you say, that's a sort of transition from a sort of paper world into an online digital
yeah,
publishing world. Yeah.
still the vast majority of their stuff is paper, Pete.
Yeah.
And they're slowly but surely pushing more and more and more, and getting more and more of their advertising via the internet and digital media space, and pushing
Yeah.
that sort of growth, because it's like everything else, it's a legacy, isn't it? It's a legacy sort of thing to be print these days, and lots of the younger people that we know aren't going to buy a broadsheet, aren't going to buy
Yeah.
the paper. They're accessing their data and having it curated on a platform somewhere, so they're looking to do that. So the old Trinity Mirror PLC, the portfolio of newspapers, websites, etc., is going to become more and more multimedia,
An
and it's
online thing, yeah.
absolutely, and they're the largest entity in that space in the whole of the
Yeah.
UK. So they've
I don't
got.
know if you heard, the slightly strange thing that came out recently was that book sales have gone up again. Sales of real physical, like paper, Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it, really? Absolutely incredible.
It's good, and
Right.
I love my books, Pete. You know
Yeah.
that, and my wife hates it because every time I go out, if I'm allowed out on my own on a Saturday, and I get to the shops, I always have to go to a bookshop and have a little look in, get myself a coffee, sit down, check out a few books, and I'll come back with three or four. And she's like, "Who have you bought those for presents?" I'm like, "Yes, for myself and a friend." But I'll come back with a book, and if Harriman House was a listed company, I think the share price would be sky high. But
Rocketing.
the book company that I own shares in is Bloomsbury.
Yeah, BMY.
Yeah,
Yeah, yeah.
and they've done reasonably well, and their RNS should be coming out very soon, and they're
Yeah, I
part
would
of
have thought that's one to keep hanging on to, because they do seem to be doing a very good job of switching away from just Harry Potter to other stuff. So yeah,
Oh
good
mate,
stuff.
but Harry Potter makes up a fraction of what it
Yeah,
used to.
well, it used to be a massive bit, didn't it?
It used to be a
But
huge bit, and now
yeah,
it makes it
they've
probably
done a good
makes up
job.
about 15%, if not 10%, of the whole of the revenue, if
Yeah.
that, maybe even sub 10. But they've got their half year results out next week. But the shares have been just slowly but incrementally just growing, because like you say, they've been sat in a trading range for absolute yonks, Pete.
Yeah.
And really, really going nowhere from 2015, yeah, all the way to half year, first quarter of 2018, just sitting in that trading range of £1.50, £1.80, going nowhere. And then
Yeah.
last year it started to move up, cracked £2, went above £2.40, went back down to £2, and this year it's risen from £2, and we're sitting now at new all-time highs.
Oh, lovely.
£2.62,
That's so bullish. Brilliant.
and it's paying a nice yield as well all the time. It's been paying 3 or 4% yield.
Well, yeah, I remember it. I mean, I remember, as you say, a couple of years ago, I had an absolutely lovely yield, like 5%, backed by a load of cash. So
Absolutely. So if they can come out with some reasonable results next week, I suspect that we'll see a few more people coming onto the bandwagon and trying to buy the stock, because it's not one of those that's
yeah.
talked about. And you know me, I prefer my stocks not to be talked
Never
about. I don't want
mentioned it.
everyone and his dog and 20 people saying, "Oh, this is," and someone puts a tweet and there's 20 likes on it. I
Yeah.
prefer not to have likes on the tweets, you know what I mean? Or retweets about the actual stock.
You want a bulletin board that's extremely quiet.
Yes. And this is it. People think because lots of people are in the stock or talking about the stock, it's going to do well. It ain't necessarily the case.
You know, it's funny you're talking about bulletin boards. I've noticed with so many stocks at the moment, and I'm talking good stocks, not junk, you know, whatever. Loads of stocks, you look at the bulletin boards, there's been no entry on them for weeks. Loads of them. It's absolutely amazing. It just shows you how much the sort of general malaise is keeping people out of stocks or just not excited, you know. And I've had several people say to me on Twitter, you know, oh, I'm really bored with the market at the moment. I'm going to sit out on cash for a bit. There's a lot of that kind of thing going on.
There's a lot of that going on, Pete, and it's not just malaise, right? Unfortunately, and as you know, I do quite a lot behind the scenes for numerous people, and there's quite a lot of people out there, Pete, that are actually hurting, you know. And these are
Oh,
investors
I'm sure they are. I'm
that they
sure
are
they are.
investors and also traders, and lots of stocks have impacted them over the course of 2019. And we've had a record number of profit warnings. And one of the
It's been so
podcasts,
many warnings, so
profit,
many.
yeah, one of the podcasts that we had earlier on in the year, maybe even I think it might have been in the last two that we did. And I said, I'm pretty assured that we're going to have a record number of profit warnings. And actually, we've had the largest number of profit warnings year to date since 2008, Pete. Yeah.
Wow.
So
I hadn't realized that.
yeah,
Wow.
and that's how mad it's been. So there are
I
people.
feel like I've been quite lucky then.
Well,
But I had all mine last year. I had a terrible year last year where everything I held had a profit warning, it seemed like. It was a horrible year, but this has been much better for me this year.
I think that's part of the thing, Pete, is that no one is safe. There's no one stock that anyone can say that this ain't going to happen to because they don't
No.
know what's going on. You
Exactly.
mean, and the problem is that you don't know what you don't know. You don't know as an NLP disposition, and everyone does their research and they get blindsided by the fact they've done so much research in this stock and they know it so well.
It
You
can't possibly go wrong
can't
because I
possibly
know
go
it's.
wrong. The CEO sells a big chunk of the company and they still can't see nothing wrong. And then 3 months later, the share price is down 30, 40, 50%, and they're going, "Oops." Yeah.
Oh, yeah, then it's panic time, isn't
Then
it?
it's panic time.
And all their in-depth research they forget about. And they just got to dump it, got to get out as fast as they can because they've completely got panicked. And it's just difficult. It really is.
It is difficult, but what I find frustrating about it all, Pete, is the fact that there are some really good people out there who do some really, really good research, and I keep banging on about psychology, right? And the hardest part of investing, yeah, is having the resilience and the wherewithal to actually sustain doing investing over the long term,
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
because
Staying in the game.
you're staying in the game because you can't get every single pick that you invest in, regardless of the amount of research you've done. You can't get them all right. Anyone that tells you
Impossible.
I've timed the bottom there, I've timed the top there, and I've made 100% here and I made 100% there, and blah blah blah, they're lying. It's simple as
Yeah,
that,
so
right?
difficult to do.
So you and I, when there's a massive profit warning in a stock, we'll say, "Oh my days, that's me again. I've been hit," right?
Yeah,
There's
exactly.
people out there, and I've seen six, seven, eight different profit warnings this year of various companies, and when that happens, nothing's said. No one's talking about it. No one's
No one
saying that
holds them anymore.
they've lost something on that stock. You know, when I get hit, I'm there and I'm written about it. And I've said, "This is what's happened." Really, really, annoyed with it, but that's what's happened. You know, this week I know about 15 different people that own Bioventix, right? This week it came out with some data. Wasn't that great? We're looking for this new drug to grow really rapidly. It was like tumbleweed across Twitter. Hardly anyone mentioned that they own Bioventix, but there's loads of people that own that stock.
Oh, we know every man and his dog is in Bioventic. And you know, I mean, it's funny you say that because I actually was looking at Bioventics today, and it strikes me that if it drops back a bit more, I'd be quite interested in it because I still think it's a flipping good stock. I really do quite fancy it, but not at this price. I'd like to see it, you know, back a bit cheaper.
It's a good stock. It's a good company. The margins are ridiculous, Pete.
Oh yeah, it's unbelievable. It's like 80%, 85% margin or something, isn't
Absolutely. So you can see why people love the stock, but it rolled over at 43. It's just hit 30 yesterday, and they'd really need that secondary drug to kick on and make some significant revenue because the PE is really, really racy.
Yeah, so they were talking about they do these, what is it, monoclonal sheep antibodies, whatever the hell that is. That's what they do apparently, and they're on about getting other antibodies and stuff that they can supply. And they were saying that a lot of it won't happen until 2025 to 2030. That's proper long-term thinking, which actually I quite like that. Do you know what I mean? I like the fact that they are thinking ahead and planning ahead, and it is a kind of stock that if we can get it at a flipping good price, then it could be a real beauty. Because they've paid special dividends in the past as well, haven't they?
Yeah,
Because
they've been
because the margins are so high, it generates out a lot of cash.
it's
So,
throwing off a lot of cash. They just need to bump up that revenue stream, really. And some of the investors that have got in there earlier, like Leon Boros, he's done phenomenally well on that stock,
Oh yeah, Lee. I mean, Leon's
hasn't
just a
he?
legend, isn't he? He's so
And
bloody good. He's
therefore he's going to probably remain invested in that and wait for the next leg of that journey. And that next leg of that journey is going to take the share back to 50 plus, if and when it happens. You know what I mean? It's a question of where does it go prior to that next leg,
Yeah, exactly. It's bound to have some ups and downs along the way, isn't it? Like they all do. Mate, you were talking about FTSE 100 stocks that have moved a lot and stuff.
Yes.
I don't know if we covered all that, or if anything else you wanted to add to that.
No, I wanted to ask you about Auto Trader because I thought you'd mentioned it before.
No, well, I mean, I think we might have mentioned it on a podcast or something, but I don't hold Auto Trader or anything. We got any thoughts on it?
Well, it's got some data coming out in a little while, but that was up 6% this week, and I couldn't understand why. Because there's my sort of thinking is sales of cars and secondhand cars isn't that great. It's quite tepid. It's been we've been going on a decline, but
Yeah, cars is
they
difficult,
must be doing something right because they're still growing.
Well, obviously they're more an online operation, aren't they? Which obviously gives them a bit of an edge. But no, I don't know, I haven't seen anything particular. I didn't know, I haven't noticed any news come out on it myself or anything.
All right, we'll have to put that
Strange.
one out to the listeners then, as to tell us what's going on with
What
that,
else is going on?
what is going on with Auto Trader. But it's a stock which and again, that's another stock. It's a £4 billion stock, Pete. I remember when there used to be a guy in a van who's driving the Auto Trader publications into the news agents, and that's the first time you ever saw what was on sale.
It's amazing because it sort of shows you how companies can grow over time, doesn't it? It's like if I remember 20 years, God, 30 years ago or something, when I used to sell motorbikes, we used to have a man from Auto Trader used to come around and photo our bikes,
Oh,
and
wow.
that would be on on the Friday or something, and then on the Tuesday the magazine would come out and all of our bikes would be photoed in there, and the words that we'd provided to go alongside it. And I'm sure it was, as you say, it was just a magazine back then, and that was it, But it's incredible how well they've done to become a £4 billion company. It's just phenomenal.
Absolutely.
Which, funnily enough, talking about companies that grow and grow and grow and have this incredible history, one that I bought the other day, Hotel Chocolate, HOTC.
Yep.
The big thing that stood out to me on that is the historical progress. I wrote a blog about HOTC, which obviously people can find on my website. And I wrote that, I don't know, a couple of months ago or something, and I've been sort of waiting to buy them and just hadn't got around to it. And in there, I've actually put you can find it on their website as well. They've got like a history of the company sort of year by year, going from something like, I don't know, 1994 or five or whatever it is. And they go through sort of each year, and they talk every year about the changes in the business that happened. So we're not talking about the profit or the revenue or whatever. We're just talking about the changes in the business. And it's just incredible how every year they've done fairly significant changes that have just helped to grow the business. And that's extremely impressive.
This is about companies transitioning, Pete, and constantly looking to grow. This goes back to the conversation we had a little while back about the likes of Marks and Spencers and Tesco's sitting on their laurels. You've
Yeah,
got
doing nothing.
companies like Chocolat, Oatmetal Chocolat, that have continually looked to innovate and grow. That's the difference between a company that's going to sustainably and organically grow and a company that's going to stagnate and not grow.
Yeah, and obviously something like HOTC has the advantage of being small. So, you can grow when you're small. And obviously it gets harder to do that when you become a massive, great behemoth that's been around for 100 years.
But
You
it's about being nimble, Pete, and having a management team that's always looking to do something different and tweak and improve, and not think, well, we're the best at we're the best at what we do, so therefore we don't have to worry.
Exactly that. And the interesting thing with HOTC is that they popped out to an all-time high just the other day, which is what spurred me to buy some. So I've only taken a small position for now, just a starter position, because I sort of wish I'd bought them a little bit lower, but hey, that's life. But it's a company that I want to be in because, I look at that sort of 25-year record of progress and the revenues and the profits have all grown over that time. And I just think, there is no reason why the kind of achievements they've had in the business couldn't keep going for quite a few more years yet, I think. And obviously the big thing now is international expansion because they've just opened up in Japan and they've opened up in Tokyo and they've opened up in New York. And I think there's massive potential to keep growing.
You've raised a fair point there, Pete, and the beauty of that model is that it's, again, they're looking at online, looking at subscription, so they're not looking about really going out there and opening lots of shops,
Yeah, and
not looking at lots of branches like Metro, are they,
No, I mean it. The thing is, they start. I mean, I first came across them. I'm sure most listeners know I'm a wheelchair user. I had a motorbike accident back in 1998, and I was in hospital for like months and months and months. And that's where I first came across Hotel Chocolate because some friends sent me a box of chocolates through the post with Hotel Chocolate. And that's sort of how I got to know them, and sort of I occasionally used them myself to send people gifts and whatever. And I've just seen the company just grow and grow and grow. And now they've got one in Windsor. I live in Windsor, and they've got one in Windsor, and they're just really impressive shops, real premium products, top end stuff. It's not your Thorntons, mate. I'll tell you, it's not your Cadbury selection box, mate. It's proper full on luxury
quality.
quality stuff.
So,
And
but my question would be, Pete, had you invested £1,000, right,
yeah.
in 1998?
Oh, don't even go there, mate. Don't go there. The thing is, I couldn't because,
When did
well,
they list?
they didn't list until about 2 or 3 years ago, so I couldn't.
Oh, okay. I'll let you off.
But I mean, you're right. I mean the guy who started it, Angus Thirlwell. Interesting that Angus Thirlwell, I think he's about 54, 55. So he's still, hopefully, fingers crossed, got a few years in him yet. You know what I mean? And he's driven the business forward all that time. And if hopefully he'll stay with the business and keep his baby growing. And I'd love it if he does that.
That's brilliant.
I mean, it's not cheap. I mean, it's probably on a forward PE now of about 40, so it's really not cheap. But it has got cash. I think it had about, I don't know, it had something like 10 million of cash or something. But it's that sort of reliable growth that people are paying up for. It's not always the case that high PE means you shouldn't buy it.
Pete, that my favorite book, right, is a book written by a chap called William J. O'Neill,
Oh
right?
yeah.
Everyone just,
Bill to his mates.
Bill to his mates, and the
Yeah.
book is How to Make Money in Stocks: A Winning System in Good Times or Bad. And that book is the book that transformed my investing life, right? And
Sounds
one of the
good.
things that came out from that book led me to invest in Arm Holdings eventually. And it was to reiterate that a high PE and a new 52-week high, multi-year high, doesn't mean that the stock has peaked. It actually means potentially it's got far more legs going than you can imagine. So
Yeah,
you're
no, I
going
think
out there and
that's
buying
so
a hotel
true.
chocolat for some people going, because I'm a bargain hunter, Pete, I'll admit that, right? I don't want to
Yeah.
buy a 52-week high. But, there are stocks that I've got in my portfolio that have hit 1 year high, 2 year high, 5 year high. I'm still buying them when I get my dividend. I'm reinvesting them. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? I don't necessarily go out there and buy a stock like hot chocolate at 52-week high or multi-year high, but I will not say to anybody, don't go and buy that because it's a 52-week high. If you've done your research, I'll say absolutely well done because you're on the right track there because you that could have another 10, 20, 30% still to do before they have their next results out,
Exactly,
And then
exactly.
next year it's a fresh start again. So yeah, you've nailed it there, mate. Don't be put off because it's a 52-week high.
I mean, I took the view that, it doesn't seem like a cheap stock. So I haven't gone mad on it. I've just put a small bit of money in it. So I'm in, my feet are in the door. I'm there to play the game. If it drops back, I'm not going to cry too much because I'll be very happy to buy more because it's a company that I just think long term that I can just park away and I think it will just keep steadily delivering for me with potentially over 5 years or something, the upside could be enormous. So, very happy to have it. Mate, another one that's sort of on a high rating, but I keep looking at and thinking, blimmin' it, I should own that. Do you know that GB Group? GBG?
Is it software or telecommunications or something like that?
Yeah, it does fraud and identity management stuff.
Okay.
I don't hold it, but I think it had results this week. I might be wrong there, but I remember reading about it recently and thinking, oh my God, it's on high PE. But you look at it just keeps delivering, and it's like a high PE ain't that high if it keeps growing. And the growth rate is stunning on it. It's like 40% growth. It really is cracking on. And I just think that's one that I really ought to look at.
It's not one I've looked at it years ago, Pete, and I'll admit, this sounds like a massive contradiction. I'll admit that having looked at it, I was a little bit like, and I think it's
It's
always been pricey, Pete.
always been pricey, but do you know who has got it, mate?
Go
Good
on.
old Robbie Burns, Naked Trader. He's had it for
Oh.
like 10 years, and you just
Has he
think, no,
really?
how does he do it? He's
Oh,
incredible.
man.
Yeah,
Well, there
incredible.
you go. That just goes to show, doesn't it? There you go.
And like you say, it's always been expensive. We would always say it's expensive, but my God, it's been amazing. And it just keeps churning out. And obviously, identity fraud management, that it's obviously a hot thing, isn't it? It's just
Oh
so,
yeah, absolutely.
Oh, don't. What other ones you got, mate? You were mentioning Prudential or something earlier.
Yeah, as I've mentioned before, re the cash from Burford, 1370%, and recent takeovers and so on and so forth. I'm just stuffed with cash in the portfolio,
Oh,
so.
you must be like Woodford, too much cash, you don't know what to do with it.
No, I'm not
I
going to go
know, I'll
buying.
go and buy some unlisted garbage.
No, I'm not going to go and buy any unlisted garbage, Peter. Thank you very much. So, one of the stocks I bought recently was Prudential, and my research said to me basically that the sum of the parts, and that's one of the analysis that I do regarding stocks. So, when you see a Twitter tweet from me that says SOTP, I'm talking about sum of parts, and that's basically
Oh,
the
that
whole.
doesn't mean stop.
No, it doesn't. It's not me
Doesn't
misspelling
mean you've
stop. No,
misspelled stop.
no. That's basically the makeup of the whole company. For some companies, it could be a
Some
piece
of the
of land
bits.
that they've got or a warehouse that they own and they're selling off the land and the warehouse. Those assets aren't really on the books. And I'd done my research and it came to an analysis value for the whole of Pru. Of more than £18,
PRU,
and I was being relatively conservative with that, and there was lots of talk over a year about them splitting up and it becoming Prudential and M&G, two different entities. So the stock just drifted and drifted and drifted and
And
drifted.
they're two different businesses, aren't they? In the sense that Prudential is a life insurance company, isn't it? And M&G is really an asset management company, like a fund management company.
Correct. Although saying that, they do overlap in the
Oh
sense
yeah, it's going to be a lot
there's
of
lots
crossover.
of overlap, and but now you've got a company that's focused on Asia, and one that's focused on the UK and rest of the world almost, you know what I mean?
So Prudential's the Asia one, and M is it MNG, isn't it? The
MNG,
asset. Yeah, MNG
MNG is the ticker
is
symbol,
more
and MNG.
UK.
MNG is the actual company. So they split at the start of the week, and you've got a split, and Pru opened up. I purchased at £14.42, and Pru opened up just under £14, and MNG shares was spun off and opened just above £2. So that's £16 there already. And then you've got the
So you've got a
dividends.
nice little return there, haven't you? Just like that
Already, yeah,
from a
already.
stock doing the splits.
Already, I've covered what I initially purchased it at
That's brilliant.
back in, and that was only last month, Pete. I purchased at the end of September, so already I'm up more than 10% on the actual nearer to 20, well, just shy of 20% on the deal,
That's
and
lovely.
that's before we've started kicking on regarding all the dividends that are going to come out of Pru, and the dividends that are going to come out of M&G, and M&G's dividend over the next 12 months. It's probably going to be 7 to 7.5%.
Well, I was reading about this today, and you're right, it's going to be absolutely meaty. I think it might even have been higher than that. And they're forecasting in 2020 and 2021 that it's going to be up near like 9% is what they think. So, I mean, that's what the analysts are forecasting and stuff.
The thing is this, right? You've got a boring company, Pete, and my thinking is this. I've made a chunk of change from Burford. I've had a few takeovers this year, right? And my cash is sitting there, and I've put it in the if I take it out of my ISA, that's a really silly move to make. If I leave it at cash sitting on my account, the only people making money out of that cash is a platform provider, okay? So whilst I can't and won't be willing to put all of that money into Prudential, I want to work some of my cash, and whilst I'm waiting, if I can get 6, 7, 8% for over the course of the year, that's 2% shy of my whole of what I want for my income portfolio return annually anyway.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, it's a lovely return to get, to be able to get 8% a year for very, very little effort is fantastic.
Absolutely. So, I'm looking at the tweet that you kindly put out earlier today. So the M&G side of it is due to pay 11.9 2% dividend for 2019,
Yeah, because there's
plus
going to be a special dividend,
and a
isn't there, as
special
well?
dividend of 3.85. So that's just shy of 15 pence
No
for a
mate,
share
no
of.
mate. It's yeah, you're right. Sorry, you're right. Sorry. It's 15p, and obviously you need to do that on a share price, which is not like
So
240.
the share
Yeah,
price
sorry.
is around two. I have not looked at it today. It's around 2.20 or 2.15.
No, I think it was 240 when I looked, but maybe I'm wrong.
So now you're looking at a yield of 8% or so. So I'm
Yeah,
very
it's
happy
nice.
with that. So
It's
they've
nice.
done the splits and all the rest of it. And talking of splits, I wanted to chime in about Smith and Nephew and the CEO finally deciding to go after 18 months, just under 2 years, because he's been upsetting everybody, saying he's not getting paid enough.
Just you couldn't make it up, could you? I mean, who can eat on like 1.5 million a year or whatever a year? I mean, it's poor blokes on the breadline.
It's on the breadline, Pete. I mean, the thing that really ticks me off is the fact that since he's been there, the share price has actually done really, really well, Pete.
Oh right, well
It's
that's typical, isn't it?
he's got in there. Obviously, he's had his bonuses as well on top of his basic salary, Pete. And I'm sure his house is being paid for, and his travel expense, and his pension is a meaty sort of contribution to his pension. But since he's been there, the share price has done significantly well. So he's taken the share price from nearer to 12.50 all the way up to touching 20 quid. So,
That's impressive.
for a
That's
company of that sort of size, 16
fair
billion
play.
pound
That's good.
company, he's taken it from it being worth nearer to 10, 11, up to 16. So he's done well by the company.
Yeah.
But he wants to be in America or somewhere else where he's getting paid what he used to get paid, which is nearer to 4 or 5 million pounds per year rather than 1.5 basic, which is fair enough. So they've got a new CEO. I bought the stock and decided to get out of it because it started because I use fundamental analysis, technical analysis, and sum of parts analysis, as you
Yeah.
know, yeah. So I decided once I saw it falling out of its exponential 15-day moving average that I was going to just get out of it for a little while
Yeah.
and wait and see. And they've got some results that are coming out soon. So I thought, well, you know what? Let me just get ahead of the game and get out of the stock. I didn't make much on it
Yeah.
overall because I bought it just shy of £13 and trimmed it and then sold out totally of it on a few days back. So I've not done too badly out of it in a
It
sense.
sounds like you've done pretty decent, I would have said.
Yeah,
What
I mean,
do you sell them at roughly?
so the last bits I sold between 1853 and
Oh mate,
1863.
that's not bad from what did you say 13 you paid? I mean that's
13.
not bad, is it? Let's be
Yeah,
honest, it's not
so
bad.
over the course of, I've bearing in mind I bought them last May, beginning of May.
Mate, that's a really good return.
So 43% in the case of
That's
18.
a really good return. And again, it's 43% on something that was pretty low risk.
Yes.
And this is the thing, people just don't seem to sort of factor risk. Well, two things. People don't factor risk into returns, and they don't factor activity levels. For me personally, I want things that are fairly low risk to medium risk or whatever, and I don't want to do much. And so many people seem to think that, you just keep continuing, you buy this, you sell this, you buy this, you sell this, you're just chopping around, just so big. And it's the classic busy fool syndrome. Yeah.
Yes.
So much of that I see where people just buy, they're just frantically buying and selling all the time. They haven't got a clue what they're flipping buying or selling because they never hold anything long enough to ever understand it.
Yeah, that's sadly the case, Pete. Or
Yeah.
it's a case of fear of missing out,
Yeah, and
and
it's
there's
huge effort.
yeah.
They're all the time, they're just continually churning their positions and running up dealing costs and running up spread fees and whatever. And they're also taking on a lot of risk by doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, I was very lucky in the timing of it, and it was only because of the technical analysis, and it was a recurring failure of the 50-day exponential moving average that I saw, and that triggered me coming out right at 18 odd. But bizarrely, 1 week later was when the CEO said, "Actually, I'm actually fed up now, and I'm leaving." And Pete, that day that announcement was made, the share price went from £18 odd, £19, right? Below 17 is what it hit, and it's just sitting around the 17 level now. So it dropped a good
Took a
10%
big
below where I'd
drop.
sold it at. Yeah.
Took a big drop. I mean, I've always thought Smith and Nephew is one of those companies that sort of should have done better than it ever has.
Yes.
With what they do, making hip replacements and knee replacements
Replacements,
and
yeah.
whatever, with an aging population, blah blah blah. It should be like one of the best stocks you could ever have. And it just when I look back over the years, it just never seems to really live up to its potential.
And that had been the case for a little while, Pete. And this is why I'm
Yeah.
saying that this CEO actually was the first one to give that share price a really good kick. You
Yeah.
know, he really did get that sort of moving. He just shaped the company into a different sort of growth sphere, in the time that he was there.
Do you know,
And
it strikes me as very strange, though. I mean, think about it, right? If you were that CEO or whatever, it's all right to say, oh, yeah, I'm going because I'm going to be offered more money. But, wouldn't you, want to see it through? It sort of makes me think, is there something else? Does he think now, he's picked the low-hanging fruit. He's done the easy bit of turning the business around. Is it now the case that it's harder to get, harder to make progress with the business? And he's thinking, ooh, I've been offered this job, through a headhunter or something. I've been offered this job over in America. This is a good time for me to go.
Well, there's been no mention of him being headhunted or having another job yet,
But
Pete.
that's how it works, isn't it?
But
That's how it
yes, I was
works
going to say
generally.
that's how it works.
Yeah.
We're likely to see him finish his garden leave. I'm sure he's going to have to give a bit of notice.
Yeah,
But
it'll suddenly pop up somewhere, yeah.
would not surprise me, Pete, if January the 31st or February, March of next year, we see him in a nice juicy role with a US listed or a European listed company which has got headquarters in the US.
Exactly. It's a weird one. I don't know, it would just sort of make me wonder, you know, if you, because how long did you say he's been there? A couple of years.
Yeah,
It's not long, is it? It's
not
like,
long, 2 years.
not long, and he's obviously done a pretty good job. So, yeah, it's strange. Mate, I was going to mention, on MNG, yeah, just a reiteration of something I wrote in the tweet. It just strikes me that that's pretty much a proxy for the markets. So, if you're someone who thinks that markets are going to come under pressure, then M&G might not be a good stock to hold. If you think markets are going to do okay or are going to go higher, then M&G could be really good. So, you know, especially with that yield.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. You know, it's obviously a lot of the stuff that they've got, which isn't listed entities, is bond related insurances and so on and so forth. So yeah, you're absolutely spot on.
Well, one thing that I thought was really interesting about M&G is that it seems to be partly that classic M&G fund management business.
Yes.
But on the other hand, you've got a thing, I think it's called Heritage Insurance,
Yes.
which is like an insurance company, which is what they call in runoff, where
Yes.
so it's like it's had all the sort of money in from the insurance policies. But it's not open to new customers, so it's in what
Correct.
people run. Yeah,
Correct.
there's a couple of companies like Chesnara, CSN. I think there's another one. Is it Resolution or something that do exactly that kind of thing? And you know, Chesnara has been a lovely little stock, and it's very, very cash generative and very much a dividend payer. So I think that's quite an interesting angle on M&G that you've got that sort of slightly more boring bit, but that bit generates a lot of cash and helps to pay those dividends. But of course, it could be span out in the future, I wonder. That must be a possibility.
That's a yes, Pete. You've absolutely nailed it there. There's a few different elements to M&G,
Yeah.
which I suspect, when they've got their now they've got their independence, and over the next couple of years, there'll be bits and pieces of that. They're going to go, actually, we don't want to be bothered with that piece of it. You know
Hmm.
what I mean?
Or someone will offer them money for it. Like,
Or
I think
somebody will come and offer them money
yeah,
for it.
I think it's Resolution, isn't it? That's like a I think it's Resolution. I'm not even sure if they're listed anymore or whatever. But they specialize in buying these runoff, what they call runoff books, which is pretty much what Chesnara does, but they're much smaller. And I would have thought someone would quite fancy that runoff book, you know, to add someone who specializes in that sort of thing.
So that th this is the, I mean I value M&G nearer to £3, right?
I think that's sensible, yeah.
And you know, and I'm being conservative there, and I'm not saying it's going to happen at £3 overnight, but I want to see value realized in that company, and if it does, fantastic. If it doesn't, I'll wait. And it's going to sit in my income portfolio. I'm looking for it to generate a total return of about 10% per year going forward. And happy to just sit and wait. If the markets implode, I'll probably buy some more, you know,
Yeah, yeah.
because they won't stop paying a dividend. I wouldn't want to see the share price down at 150, obviously, you know what I mean. But 180, if things go wrong in the markets, that's a fair
Well,
price.
it's
I'll buy
interesting
some
that
more.
M&G has been around forever and a day. You know, it's got a very good record of keeping going. You know, it survived through the credit. Okay, it no doubt came under pressure in the credit crunch because everything did. But you know, it's yeah. Like I say, it's probably for me. It's not because it's a market proxy, and I've obviously got loads of exposure to the market. It's not necessarily something I want. Do you know what I mean?
Pete, there's better stocks out there that will will give you more bang for your buck, most definitely.
Well, and it's also that thing about how it fits in your own portfolio, isn't it? And it, yes,
Absolutely.
you know, and that's such an important consideration that you know, it's like there's no point just buying a stock because it looks nice. You've got to think, well, how does that actually fit with everything else I hold? Is it bringing more diversification? Is it bringing more income? Is it going to bring more growth? What does it really bring to the party? You know, and for me, it, you know, it just it. to me, it would probably bring a bit more risk to my portfolio that I don't really want. So yeah, it's not something I personally want to get excited about. And the thing is, I've got other ones that I'd rather have. You know, if I have a list of 20 stocks, M&G would probably be in that list as something that could be potentially interesting, but it may not be in the top three. You know, and that's the reality of it.
And also saying that, Pete, you've already bought probably one of the better income plays more recently when you bought Vodafone with the yield and what they're doing
Yeah,
to transition that business as
exactly.
well.
Yeah,
And if the markets implode, I don't see Vodafone getting shaken up that much because what they're doing, everyone needs.
yeah, it's got that real utility boring aspect, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
No, that's very true.
Right, Pete, I'm conscious that we've ran into the second half and
Yeah.
really brought up 40 minutes. I want you to touch on, and you can help me with this one as well, the Woodford Patient Capital twists and turns and all the rest of it,
Oh,
because the share
yeah.
price a couple of days ago touched 29 pence, just shy of 30 pence, right? Having for Woodford Patient Capital people that bought it IPO, £1, went to a premium of 121. It was sitting at 29p, and then they've come out and sorted out this deal with Schroder, and then it popped to nearly 39 pence yesterday, and it's balancing out about 37 today. So I'm very happy for all those out there that have been sitting in anguish regarding the Woodford Patient Capital Trust, but it's not over yet, is it, for all these different people holding the Woodford funds? There seems to be a lot of moving parts to this whole equation.
Yeah, it's WPCT, isn't it? I mean, I don't what exposure has WPCT got to the original, you know, to the unit trust that Woodford was running,
Well,
the one that's been closed.
they had some crossover, Pete, regarding their
Yeah,
investments.
did it actually have a holding? And it was the other way, wasn't it? It was the other way, wasn't it? It was that the unit trust had a holding in WPCT.
WPCT,
And WPCT holds a lot of stocks that are common to the unit trust. So when the unit trust continues to run it down, that could put more selling pressure on. Yeah, I get it.
This is the maddening thing about the whole debacle of WPCT, and I actually missed it until miss an aspect of that.
Yeah.
Recently, I think it was a tweet that was put out by Ed Croft,
Oh yeah.
who doesn't actually tweet that much.
Stockopedia man. Yeah.
Stockopedia founder,
Yeah. Yeah.
co-founder, and he put out a brilliant tweet. I'm just trying to find it, Pete. Here we go. And Ed Croft, love you to bits, mate. We'll have to speak at Mellow.
He's a good lad, Ed. Good lad.
He's a doggy. Yeah, he's a good guy. So he put out a really fantastic graph, and it shows if and I'll share this with people next week. He put out a brilliant picture of Woodford Equity Income Fund's holdings,
Yeah.
end of 27 20, 2016, and performance until the fund closed, right? And right at the very, I'm going to go through some of these stocks, okay?
Hey, if you can hear a sort of booming noise, I think Legoland, which is round the corner from me, is having one of their firework nights.
I can't hear
So don't be freaked out, listeners, if you hear this like really strange booming in the background.
So he had a stock called Genomic or Geronic Health Inc., which he sold, and that's since gone up. When the fund closed, was up nearly 150%. He had HomeServe, that was up near 80%. Beazley, which until recently I held.
Yeah.
AstraZeneca, which obviously he sold out most of that was up significantly. Cranswick, BTG, Burford, which we know all what happened to that. He kept that right until the close, and its share price went from £19 per share down to just under £4 a
Oh,
share at one
it was still
stage.
being held, wasn't it? Yeah.
And now that's back up at around £8 per share.
Yeah.
But right at the very bottom, RM2, which he held all the way through
Oh,
to being going exiting for nothing,
that was the one I kept going on about on Twitter. I couldn't believe it, held that garbage.
utility wise, which is down,
Oh,
plus 90
I got hit
percent.
with that one, mate. So I'll own up to that one, UTW.
Theros Technology,
XSG, yeah.
Sphere Medical,
Don't know what that is.
Media Pharma, Vergion, Itaconix, Hevo, Allied Minds, Hallow Source, 4D Farmer. There's so many of these that are way over 50% lower than when he bought them, Pete. There's only, in fact, probably a dozen stocks that are actually in profit. So I'm not sure what happened with the equity income fund, but it got decimated, Pete, with the picks that he had.
Oh, he just had some absolute shockers, didn't he? And as we know, the unlisted stuff he had in the unit trust, and I'm not sure if he held them in WPCT, were just an absolute ridiculous situation. And what was he doing? It exasperates me that what gets me is that regulators allowed it to happen. I just think it was terrible.
There's a lot of unanswered questions out there, mate, and there is hundreds of thousands of investors, a lot of them, that are retired, that had a big chunk of change invested in those funds because of who he was.
Yeah.
And there's lots of questions to be answered, and there's already people talking about getting together legal teams and so on and so forth, and pursuing redress and litigation against Hargreaves Lansdown, Woodford funds, etc., etc.,
Well,
because
I'd
of
imagine
what's happening.
Neil Woodford himself, will come under pressure, I would have thought, from that kind of thing. I mean, it's interesting. There was that program, BBC One, a Panorama. People can probably find it on iPlayer. And it was the usual sort of panorama, but it was interesting that they were, already sort of like doorstepping him outside the office and saying, "Hello, Mr. Woodford, have you got anything to say to your holders?" And he's sheepishly getting into the office as fast as he can. But you can see more of that going on, and it's not
There's a pic.
surprising.
It's not surprising. There's a picture, and I'll say this every time that I speak about Woodford. This guy, this individual fund manager, is one of my heroes, Pete. You know
Oh,
what I mean? He's
it's
one of the people
just
I looked and thought, this guy's
devastating.
absolutely amazing. But when the funds were coming out, I wasn't going to invest in them, Pete, and I didn't invest in them. And it's only a bit of chopping and changing the odd trade here and there that I've ever done with any of the funds. I just thought, I wasn't feeling it, and I wasn't going to pay a premium for somebody who was buying the stuff that he was buying at the time. But there's a picture that went viral, Pete. This might show a little bit of what his character is like. There's a disabled parking space outside of where he got doorstepped, outside his firm, and he's left his whatever, I don't know what sort of car it was, obviously a top end car, and all the parking spaces that there were, that was one of the nearer ones to where he wanted to go. He's parked it in the disabled spot, Pete.
Don't. That's just.
When things are going wrong for you, don't add to the annoyance of everybody else by showing you've not got that in you to go, actually, I park to the second bay
Don't throw fuel on the fire,
on the
is there?
fire.
It's
Exactly.
just.
So honestly, mate, I don't know, but
Terrible.
there's going to be books, there's going to be films, there's going to be more
Oh,
bios, there's going to be
yeah.
more hints.
I've nearly written my book. No.
There's going
Yeah.
to be more kiss and
Yeah.
tells. This is going to run, mate, I'm telling
Of
you.
course it will. But it's interesting. You mentioned there about the premium, and it's an interesting point to be buying an investment trust on a premium because of the reputation of the fund manager. It's probably a little bit silly, isn't it, really? I mean, I very rarely would buy anything at a premium to its assets. I did so with PHP, Primary Health Properties. I did pay quite a premium for that, but I just figured that it was quality and whatever, and it had a pretty decent dividend even when I bought it on a premium. But I would never dream of paying a premium just because it's like this amazing fund manager. I mean, what happens if the guy, I don't know, breaks his leg next day or something, and he can't be a fund manager for a while? It's just madness, really. I don't understand why anyone would do it. You just don't want to be paying premiums for that sort of thing.
You shouldn't, but unfortunately, Pete, there are people out there, there are entities out there that were marketing this particular fund manager and his funds to the absolute max.
Oh, there was a
You know,
lot of
and so many people were like, yeah, I'll buy it, I'll buy it. I don't have to worry about it for 3 years, 5 years, and so on and so forth. It will just do what it needs to do, and it'll deliver. And ordinarily, they would have been right, but I'm not sure what has happened over the course of the time that he was running the funds to have lost his
My
way
sort
so
of hunch
much.
is it's just too much money. He just had so much money being thrown at the funds. He just couldn't find anything to do with it. I think that's what a lot of the problem was. And he ended up buying all this garbage and paying over the odds for it just because it was the only thing he could put the money into. I think it was a lot of it.
Yeah, I'm gonna just throw this quote in there, Pete, because I haven't put out a quote for a little while.
Yeah.
And this is from Daniel Kahneman, and the book for everyone
Oh,
out there,
yeah, Kahneman, yeah.
yeah, is Thinking Fast and Slow.
I love that book. Love it.
Yeah, brilliant book. And the quote is, "A reliable way to make people believe in falsehoods is frequent repetition, because familiarity is not easily distinguished from truth. Authoritarian institutions and marketeers have always known this fact."
Well, mate, we're back to the old Boris Brexit. I'm gonna leave on the 31st of October. Keep saying it enough and people believe it, even though it's blatantly obvious to everyone that ain't gonna happen on that time.
Yeah, and he's not gonna write to the EU either for an extension. Is that correct? Oh.
Send a photocopy. On that thing about a premium for fund managers, just a quick one that when you've got a fund, so like an investment trust or whatever, they should really always be on, pretty much always be on a discount to NAV, you know, especially if it's like an investment trust that is made up of listed companies, simply for the reason that if the fund manager ever tried to liquidate the fund, it's going to drive the prices down.
Absolutely.
So it should always be at like a sort of 3, 4, 5% discount on almost anything
Absolutely,
that's that
absolutely.
nature. So it's
But
actually bonkers that
you
people are paying premiums.
absolutely, but you find that depending on who the manager is and depending on what the niche that trust is
Yeah.
in, that some of them will
People get
get
excited.
very racy, 15, 20, 20% premium, Pete, and people are still buying it, and you're going, why?
Just asking for trouble, really, isn't it?
Right, mate, this is the
It's
second
scary.
half, and we've already run up 55 minutes, mate.
No, that's good, mate. That's good. We probably need to knock it on the head there.
We'll knock it on the head. I think people will be happy that we've barely touched on Brexit. So
Yeah,
we'll call it there.
actually.
Everybody, wishing you very, relaxing, reflective time with your families. Have a chill out this weekend and come back to the markets, reinvigorate and recharge. We look forward to seeing you all next week on the markets, and obviously as well at Mello London on the 12th and 13th of November. We'd love to see you there. We maybe have some news for you in the next couple of days about whether or not we're having an involvement there, but we'll definitely both be there together as well.
Yeah, I'll be down on the Tuesday afternoon, so yeah.
Okie dokie. All right, everyone, take care. God
See you
bless.
later.
Bye bye. Bye bye.